हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सद्गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, page 100. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 20. The soldiers Lord Ramachandra recruited in the jungle were all monkeys and did not have proper equipment with which to fight the soldiers of Ravana. For Ravana's soldiers were equipped with weapons of modern warfare, whereas the monkeys could only throw stones, mountain peaks, and trees. It was only Lord Ramachandra and Lakshmana who shot some arrows. But because the soldiers of Ravana were condemned by the curse of Mother Sita, the monkeys were able to kill them simply by throwing stones and trees. There are two kinds of strength, Daiva and Purushakara. Daiva refers to the strength achieved from the transcendence, and Purushakara refers to the strength organized by one's own intelligence and power. Transcendental power is always superior to the power of the materialists. Depending on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one must fight one's enemies, even though one may not be equipped with modern weapons. Therefore, Krishna instructed Arjuna, Mam anusmara yudhya cha, Bhagavad Gita 8:7. Think of me and fight. We should fight our enemy to the best of our ability, but for victory we must depend upon the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the saying before, is we're trying to do something or come to a particular platform, development, devotional service. That's going to happen by the grace of the Lord. So thinking of Krishna, then we perform the activity, that's when we'll get some benefit. Right? Otherwise, then it has to go by whatever is our power. What we have from our previous karma, using our intelligence, apply that, and then see what you get. But here is, and we see how qualified Arjuna is. But Krishna is saying, think of me and fight. Right? So therefore, it's by Krishna's grace, then everything goes wonderfully.
Right? We still have to apply ourselves.
Yeah, we have to apply ourselves. But we have to think of Krishna. So we have to think of Krishna and work. Right? And breathe and put one foot in front of the other. You know, yes, it's getting complicated. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Thereafter, when Ravana, the king of the Rakshasas, observed that his soldiers had been lost, he was extremely angry. Thus he mounted his airplane, which was decorated with flowers, and proceeded towards Lord Ramachandra, who sat on the effulgent chariot brought by Matili, the chariot driver of Indra. Then Ravana struck Lord Ramachandra with sharp arrows. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, "You are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog, for as a dog steals edibles from the kitchen in the absence of the householder, in my absence you kidnap my wife, Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you."
What?
Yes.
Why he called him man-eater? Just to insult?
Because they're the...
But he was not a Rakshasa.
It seems he was a man-eater, that I know. I mean, hang out with Rakshasas, and they're your cooks, then what do you expect to end up with? Like we saw, was it Sauvirya?
Saudasa.
Saudasa, right? He has a Rakshasa for a cook, what did he end up with, right? So.
An earlier verse mentioned Ravana, the master of the Rakshasas.
Oh, okay. Okay, so he's master of them.
He was a Rakshasa. But he was a Brahmin as well.
He was all kinds of. He's a He's a big demon. That's
the. In 24, it says Ravana and the other Rakshasas. That seems
important. He threatened to eat Sita. If he wouldn't give in to him.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so he eats business.
He's got a wide portfolio.
Yeah. No, because he knows all those different things. That's why the whole point is you have your skills, but then you also have the consciousness. That's why we match them. Generally speaking, you see most people, it all goes together. But you can have a variety, a mix. That's why you have a Brahmin who's so qualified, but at the same time there'll be material desires, or somebody who's in a position of, like the cobbler or something like that, but they're very advanced, or, so that's the different things.
Yeah. The thing that bewildered me is because he chanted mantras so perfectly. Mantras, Brahmanas,
yeah, but he Rakshasas. It's not that he was born a Rakshasa. Oh. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He seems to have acquired his Rakshasa-ness. Because of his demoniac nature. He was opposed to the Lord. So he could do all that, not very nicely. But at the same time, he's being a king. So if he's a Brahmin, he's being a king. And so then if he's a man-eater, then, he's the king of the man-eaters.
I understand the Rakshasas eat the demigods as they fall down from the heavenly planets.
Yeah, no, that they do also.
But that's, I also, when they're calling...
Someone's got to eat it. Otherwise they'd be littering all over the place. Can you imagine that? You're sitting there peacefully in your house and suddenly, bang, this big huge monster demigod comes crashing through your roof and all that. So somebody's got to eat them.
When it says, I always understand that the demigods have subtle bodies, so that when they're eating the eating of the demigods may not be exactly what we imagine it to be. That's what I'm trying to
say. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's there also.
Yeah. Yeah. That's maybe natural, sugar-free, gluten-free.
Yes. Yeah, free range. Right, Same the demigods. Organic, free range. No chemicals. Like that.
Well, they get they are free range because they only eat lotus flowers.
Yeah, yeah. So they move around as they please. So, yeah.
Untouched by human hands.
Untouched by human hands. Yeah. All the good stuff. That's why the Rakshasas are there. No, but for them it's free because that's their meal. So it's just like
everybody's got their assigned.
Yeah, their assigned food. Yeah.
That's their assigned food.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a farmer's market in New York.
Farmer's market.
Yeah, it's like very expensive and very nice.
A very expensive and very nice. Yeah. Okay.
But in
how many Rakshasas are there?
Yeah, I mean. Environment.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
Do the demigods aware that this what's going to happen to them, or is just?
Yeah, they find out soon enough.
Because that kind of spoil it, if you know that you're enjoying.
But who talks about it?
What?
Who talks about it?
Yeah.
The point is. Whatever you take as goal, you don't talk about the problems, because those are just things to deal with. You talk about what you're going to get. So therefore, the heavenly planets are amara. So people are talking about that deathlessness of the heavenly planets. Right? So the heavenly planets are deathless. Nobody dies there. They kick you out and you die outside. it's just like, let's say you had a hospital and they're famous that no one's ever died in their hospital. But right, but then in the back lot, when the guy's going, like that, then they wheel him out the back and he dies out in the parking lot, right? So that's how it goes for demigods.
The small print.
Yeah, it's the small print, yeah. So you only hear about this stuff in the Upanishads. So only in the path of Gyan do you hear about the weaknesses in karma. Because the karma body, they don't talk about it, right? And so the jnanis, then they're comfortable talking about it. So, but then the weakness in jnan, we'll talk about it. Does that make sense? Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow on his bow. aimed at Ravana and released the arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana, vomiting blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his airplane, just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 23. In Bhagavad Gita 9:21, it is said, Ni punya martya lokam vishanti.
Shine.
Shine. I was thinking knee. What's that guy? Knee punya. He's got good knees. When the results of their pious activities are exhausted, those who have enjoyed in the heavenly planets fall again to earth. Sorry. The fruitive activities of this world are such that whether one acts piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious actions can relieve one from Maya's clutches of repeated birth and death. Somehow or other, Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences. But because of his sinful act of kidnapping Mother Sita, all the results of his pious activities were destroyed. If one offends an exalted personality, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly becomes most abominable. Bereft of the results of pious activities, one must fall down like Ravana and other demons. It is therefore advised that one transcend both pious and impious activities and remain in the pure state of freedom from all designations. Sarvopadi viminir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 19.170. When one is fixed in devotional service, he is above the material platform and is always fixed in a spiritual position. So, since the material world is always about birth and death, the only way to rise above it is to not have material desire. Right? Because of desire, then immediately the material misery is there, and then repeated birth and death. Because birth is simply fulfillment of desire. So if you simply desire to serve Krishna, or are absorbed in Krishna, then where will be your birth? Right? In the spiritual world. But if not, then you get another one here. Right? So you don't have to worry that they'll run out. There's plenty to go around. Right? But so the whole point is one becomes transcendental to pious and impious. So one can say, we become transcendental pious, but that we're also becoming transcendental to impious. So therefore, piety means following the laws of God because of the benefits you'll get for it. Transcendental means following the laws of God to please God. So what you're doing is the same. But it's no longer a pious activity, it's a transcendental activity. Well, not following the laws of God, that's vikarma, that's sin. Right? So we're not following the laws of God for ourselves. Then we're following the laws of God to please ourselves. Then we're following the laws of God to please the Lord. That's then the stages. So we're trying to come to that transcendental position. Does that make sense? So therefore, the difference between a pure devotee and a pious person following the Vedas will look the same. But the one is doing it for the benefits they'll get, you know, either in karma jnana, get an elevation of the heavenly planets, or to get liberation. But the devotee is doing it simply to please the Lord. That's why they get transferred to the spiritual realm. But everybody else, they'll take birth here again, even the pious ones.
So. Activities of a pure devotee and activities of a pious person may look the same until tragedy strikes.
Yes, yes.
And then the pious person will go, the pious fruitive actor will go, well,
what happened?
Heck with God.
Yeah.
The pure devotee will go,
yeah.
Will have a different reaction.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. The doubt about the arrow?
Or Sudarshana Chakra, keeping Ravana.
I've heard. Arrow.
It's an arrow, but I've heard sometimes it's referred to as a chakra.
That may be in another time, but this time, this one is that. Means you have Kalpa Beta. So maybe at another time he uses Sudarshan, but in this one, then he's used his arrow. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thereafter, all the women whose husbands had fallen in the battle, headed by Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, came out of Lanka. Continuously crying, they approached the dead bodies of Ravana and the other Rakshasas, striking their breasts in affliction because their husbands had been killed by the arrows of Lakshmana. The women embraced their respective husbands and cried piteously in voices appealing to everyone. O my Lord, O Master, you epitomize trouble for others, and therefore you were called Ravana. Okay, so that's what Mandodari is saying, right? Okay. Footnote 22. The very word Ravana means one who causes crying for others. Right? So, because the women are religious, they know what gets good result, what gets bad result. You know, whether they can always follow it or not, that's another thing, but they know what causes it. So, here, the husbands, they know what's caused it. Right? Like that. But now you have been defeated. We are also, now that you have been defeated, we are also defeated. For without you, the state of Lanka has been conquered by the enemy. To whom will it go for shelter? A greatly fortunate one, you came under the influence of lusty desires, and therefore you could not understand the influence of Mother Sita. Now, because of her curse, you have been reduced to the state, having been killed by Lord Ramachandra. Right? So they know, women know the power of women, whether they want to admit it or not or something, but, you know, it's known. 24 to 27. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 27. Not only was Mother Sita powerful, but any woman who follows in the footsteps of Mother Sita can also become similarly powerful. There are many instances of this in the history of Vedic literature. Whenever we find a description of ideal chaste women, Mother Sita is among them. Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, was also very chaste. Similarly, Draupadi was one of the five exalted chaste women. As a man must follow great personalities like Brahma and Narada, a woman must follow the path of such ideal women as Sita, Mandodari, and Draupadi. Right, so we see is that in all cases, that how powerful they are, but they're considered the most chaste. That's the power. Like that. By staying chaste and faithful to her husband, a woman enriches herself with supernatural power. It is a moral principle that one should not be influenced by lusty desires for another's wife. Matri vat para dare shu. An intelligent person must look upon another's wife as being like his mother. This is a moral instruction from Chanakya Shloka. Chanakya Shloka 10, because this isn't verse 10, no, it's 27. One who considers another's wife as his mother, another's possessions as a lump of dirt, and treats all other living entities as he would himself, is considered to be learned. Right? And this was some time before, you know, another great preacher came along and said a similar point. So this is standard Vedic knowledge. Right?
Didn't Ravana know these things?
Knowing and lust are two different things. Right? It means you can know, and then lust makes you not know.
Like
this doesn't make sense.
Facts.
You may neglect the facts, or you may not care about the facts. Point is like, what are we dealing with? Okay, so here we're taking the principle, the feminine nature, trying to enjoy the feminine nature, because that's all one's doing. Now, the feminine nature personified, then that's a woman. But otherwise, everything that we're trying to enjoy is feminine nature. So everybody's trying to enjoy the femaleness. Right? So that means then when seeing the female aspect, right, the femalehood, right, then one can see that in connection with yourself, that's sense gratification, or in connection with the Lord, and then that's devotional service. So how are the senses going to be engaged? Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're dealing with. So when it's connection with the Lord, then one's, depending upon the position, then one sees more or less the different aspects, and you care more or less about the secondary. Right? So in Vaikuntha, the secondary is quite prominent in its majesty. And in Vrindavan, it's how much it's supportive of, you know, that aspect of prema there. Okay? Now, on the material platform, then what you're, so one you're trying to taste prema, the other you're tasting lust. So since prema is the goal, here in the material, lust is the goal. So if you're getting the goal, then why would you worry about the other elements that are simply for leading to the goal? Does that make sense? Yes. So therefore, Ravana, his lusty desires, influenced by that, then that is the goal, is to experience lusty desires. So then what does he care for anything before that? Right? But we have to learn to control that lust, because it's not actually lust is the goal that can satisfy the living entity. It doesn't give any satisfaction to the living entity. Therefore, unless we switch that to prema, then we can't deal properly with it. Right? So when we take the goal as prema, therefore pleasing Krishna, then we can control things, because we're going for a higher purpose. But otherwise, on the material platform, what's a higher purpose than lust? Right? Does that make sense? You know, getting money, that's okay, but it doesn't really attract that much attention. But let's say like gambling, that attracts attention. Why? Because then that lust is there. You understand? So that's why the regulative principles are put in place to control lust. Because unless you control lust, how can you then become aware of or interested in prema? Because the one is just, the lust is simply the transformation of lust. I mean, of love. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. But it's different. Just like Shiva is a transformation, but it's different. He's different. Okay. So the position is the same. What we're, our goal, what we're going for. So that's why we shouldn't be in a society that's committed to lust. We shouldn't be surprised if people get overcome by lust. I always find that amusing. Is that in the material world they're totally into sense gratification, but if anybody gets some, oh no, how is that? It's like, what's wrong with these people? You know, it's like you put something out there, you know, it's like, go ahead, try to take it. And you got a big stick, and as soon as they go, whack them, you know, like that. It's just like, what's going on here? You know, it should be they're whistling and cheering, yeah, Haribol, you know, but they're not.
Is that because they're not distinguishing between love and lust?
They're not distinguishing between love and lust, but also they're not in a position, they're not on a level of rasa that they can appreciate. Point is when we deal on the platform of partiva rasa, that means anamoy, it's our own senses. So unless our senses are being satisfied, we're not satisfied. But if you're functioning on duty or the varnashram system, then you're functioning on swargiya rasa. So if someone else is, I mean, it's all about following duty and about that aspect. So if someone else is getting benefit from that, you're happy. Like that. Though you wish it was you, but you can relate to it. But the other one is like, there's talk about all of us together, but if anybody gets, immediately it's all, you know, Mauritian frogs. You know?
Envy.
Yeah, it's just envy. Well, only when you want the Dharma, then there's no envy. It means it doesn't mean that it's not there and that, but in the performance of it, the predominance is not, though there might be a little bit there, as you see. You know, like Vishishta and Vishwamitra. They're situated in their Dharma, but there's still a little bit of something there. Because that's because in goodness is still passion ignorance. Only pure goodness is gone. So only the devotees can rise above even the little pettiness that you find in people in the mode of goodness. Right, so we're surprised how they're in the motive. How can this happen? Because it's not pure goodness. So, yes.
Between love and lust, is it
polluted consciousness? Because I'm the controller and enjoyer, or Krishna's the controller and enjoyer. Like that. If it's for Krishna, then it's love, and if it's for ourselves, then it's lust. That means ourselves and whatever we identify with ourselves. That makes sense. That's why pranamoy seems like it's natural, because it's extension of ourself, and at the same time, because it's an extension, we don't necessarily see it as ourselves until it's pointed out, which we don't necessarily appreciate.
Just confirming that yesterday there was a class of Bhagavatam, and the verse indicated that the woman is the reason why the jiva falls into the human world. So that was the argument.
That was made the, in the purport, or?
Yes.
Okay. So, but so what does that mean? Oh, you just can't. You weren't in the morning class. Though one may say, but it's morning. There's a morning class before this morning class.
Early morning.
Yeah, early morning, then morning, and then after. Okay. So, in there, the point is you contact the world through your senses. Your world is what you perceive through the senses. You understand? Then the mind, you know, what you define with that and everything. But the point is all your contact with your world is through your senses. Okay? Now, depending on what it is, different items of sense gratification, they cater to one sense or another or a combination like that. The feminine nature is what sense, what you're perceiving. What are you perceiving? The feminine nature. Right, what's making it work is behind us. The masculine nature, that's a different level, because we're talking lust now. We're only seeing secondary. So that means that we're only seeing feminine nature. So now when you personify feminine nature, then that's a woman. That means all aspects of sense gratification that there is in the universe is in that one woman. Does that make sense? So that's why when you say it's because of women that we fall, that's because we get attracted to that idea of enjoying woman rather than... Because, I mean, everything's... It's like, what do you call it? One shop stop? One stop shop. Right? You understand? Everything's right there. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, let's say you want to have a picnic. Okay, if it's just yourself, you got to have a really great meal. But if there's a nice woman there, then even if it's not so great, it's still a picnic. You understand?
Even if there's no meal.
Even if there's no meal, it's a picnic. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't want to take it that far. But that's technically what it is. Even if there's no picnic, it's still a picnic. Right? That's the whole point, is that, right? You understand? So it's not that you were sitting there and then you know, in the spiritual world, and some lady came up to you, tapped you on your shoulder, and yoo-hoo, you know, and that was it.
Want it's, an apple?
I got this basket. I've been distributing that. Oh, what's your name? Maya? Why do you ask? Okay, so then... So that's the principle, is that when it says we look to the other side, that means we're on this side of the Urah. We look to that side, because then that means what's there is all about women. That's why the total thing here is about women. Even renunciation is renunciation of what? Women. Because they renounced everything else, but they're with their, then who cares? People think, you know, that's weird, just like Shiva and Parvati, right? They don't care for anything, it's just them. And then, you know, they get the... Chitraketu. Yeah, he made a comment on that, and it didn't work out good. Right? You know, so, does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that that's why we're here. That's why you see, technically, the feminist movement is how that women can enjoy women also. Why the men should only be allowed. Why can't we enjoy them also? You know? But, you know, you don't want to dig too deeply on this one.
On a quiet taste.
The polluted consciousness means I can enjoy the feminine nature. So it's either generic or it's personal. Right, generic means anything that senses contact with, and personal means it's a woman. Like that, and then everything in between. Does that make sense? So you have dead matter on one side, and female on the, like that. And so everything in between, because the ladies can relate to everything, so it's not a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
In the previous commentary, it was mentioned Sita and then Mandodari, like in the same line.
Means when they're talking about chastity.
Yeah, but if she's the wife of the demon, and she would be polluted also, and you know, she doesn't.
But not in chastity.
Not in chastity.
No. So, I mean, she's that. That's what it is. Means like even in the wedding ceremony. Then when it mentions when in the wedding ceremony when you tie the knot, for the bride and groom. Then the mantra is chanted, and within that it's mentioned so many names of the, you know, perfect couples in the universe. So Ravana Mandodari is one of them. You know, how you say the Pandavas and Draupadi. That's why he mentioned these ones, Sita and Rama. These are main names mentioned in that group. And they're all these three are part of the five. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so many are mentioned there. Like that. We have last time, last chapter, chapter four was, you know, he had, though they were mentioned separately, but Nala and Damayanti, but they weren't mentioned together because we don't get into the story, but. It's a good story. Yes.
Although Ravana wasn't chased, you know, towards his wife, but she was still chased towards him.
Means she was the, no, you could say he is chased in that she is the main wife, so everything official means when Hanuman went into the palace at night, Ravana was with Mandodari. He's not with the others. Does that make sense? It's just that means outside of the main or official, then there's so many others. But that's for hanging out. But then when you go to bed, you know, it's just, that's what you see. You don't, generally on our level, we don't see it much. But when you get up into the really wealthy, means old, wealthy, old money and all that, there's kind of an understanding that sometimes the men go off the rails, but if they come back, then everything's okay. It's not appreciated, no one likes it, but it's just a fact. They're stupid, they get distracted. But, you know, if they're trained enough, then they come back. So they have that control. Does that make sense? So in the Vedic system, then it's just been, okay, there can be more women involved. But these will be the maidservants and other things like that. So they're part of the scene. Does that make sense? Because it adds. I mean, in other words, if it's like, okay, let us say you have some young lovers, right? Now, you always see the tendency they're trying to get away on their own, right? Away from everybody else so they can just be alone. But at the same time, many times that going to get away to be alone is where all others like them are. You know, like where all the young couples go hang out, they go there because it adds to the environment. So that's the whole point, is the maidservants add to the feminine environment. The central female is whoever they're maidservants of. But that increased in femininity increases the whole environment. That means the interaction between the man and the main woman becomes prominent. I mean, becomes increased. But you have to be able to function on the sense of duties and everything else to be able to function. And that's why we're saying is that Swargiya Rasa is higher than Partiva. We're just used to, you know, how you say? Grunge metal, Partiva, you know, kinds of, you know. So we're not used to something higher like that. You know, we can't even get jeans that don't have a hole in it, right? You know, like that.
That kind of has a name in English language, a trophy wife.
Yeah, no, but this
the
is
wife
even
is like a valuable. There's like the real high class.
Yes, wife yes, 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 like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ravana's goal was Sanskrit vacation, then.
Ravana's goal is Sanskrit vacation.
So then his wife's goal.
So her goal is to be, you know, to be connected with him.
So then his goal becomes her goal, and then she's trying.
See, is you have to take what the point's being made. Don't use chala and shift it, mm-hmm. Right? Because we can't say, okay, so he's interested in sense gratification. She being the dutiful wife, so she's interested in sense gratification. She's interested in sense gratification. How can she be a chaste wife? Don't. Do that kind of stuff. No? Then what's your point?
No, the point was that because she was trying to prevent him from committing this.
Because she's religious. Chaste women means they're religious. It's just what level of religious. you know. So she being, you know, one of the top chaste women in the universe, therefore they're most religious. Right? So the form of religion will be the same whether it's Sita, who's on the transcendental platform, or Mandodari, who's on the material platform. The form is the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say you take a preparation. You take, like, paneer butter masala, okay? Now, whether you cooked it and didn't offer it to Krishna or cooked it and offered it to Krishna, is the preparation any different?
Yeah, it's
the same preparation. So that's the point, is chastity is one thing. It's a particular mechanical, you know, or technical, you know, position. Yeah. Now, whether you use it for Krishna or not, that's another thing. So she is perfectly chaste. So she's trying to influence her husband in to be religious. Like she's already telling him, you know, give Sita back this and that. And it's not just because, okay, here's another lady, I want to get rid of the lady. Because Ravana did have, I think, I'm not sure how many, but I think 10,000 wives. So, you know, one more on the pile, what does it matter? You know, you lose track after, you know.
Yeah. Five.
Yeah, you know, it's like that. Does that make sense? So, that's not the reason, is that it's going to be a problem, because all these other girls weren't someone else, generally weren't someone else's wife, like that. Some of them might be, but then, you know, they, nothing much has happened other than a, you know, a whole, how you say, wheelbarrow full of curses on his head. But other than that, because he got one because I think it was, I think Rumba. The one where he got cursed that if he touches any woman, it was Rumba Devi. So she's the wife of
Nala Kuvira.
Nala.
Or either Nala Kuvira
or Manigriva. One of the two.
One
of those two, the sons of Kuvira. But she's known as one of the big society girls, so it means you worked that one out. But the whole point is you know, she like that. So then Ravana approaches her, then he gets a curse. That's why he can't touch Sita. Right? So the whole point is the whole point. I got distracted by trying to figure out if it was Mani Griever or Nala Kuvara. Right?
The point was that she was religious.
Yeah, so she's trying to point out that, you know, you don't deal with her properly because she knows she's heard. It means it's not that the demons don't know about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they just don't care. But on the religious platform is you don't mess with the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he has a Sudarshan chakra, and when the demons, their piety does run out, just like in the heavenly planets, they fall out of there and the Rakshasas eat them. Down on the lower planets, then the Sudarshan chakra comes and kills them. So, you know that you don't mess with this guy. So she's simply pointing it out. But as we discussed before, because of lust, he can't see that. He's too interested in what he's interested in, so therefore he can't see the religious side. That's why women are there, to bring in that religious side, to keep the men on the even keel, and then the men are there to keep the women on the spiritual, because, in other words, if emotionally it's nice, then the tendencies of a woman won't care if it's spiritual or material. That's what should be there. And in fact, if the spiritual thing's not going nice, but there's some material thing going nice, they'll be there, right? Going to the temple and this one and that one, but we could all get together, put our chairs in a circle and open our hearts and, you know, criticize each other and, you know, be snarky and all that, and we can get some taste out of it. Hey, no, we're going to do that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point of the men. They show that that's material. You have to, you know, go into the spiritual ones. So it's not so much of that. This is the field you should function in to get spiritual experience. The other one, that's material. But for the women, this is what you should be doing to get good results. And if you do this, you'll get bad results. Now, whether he uses it spiritually or not, that's another thing. You understand? So the man's point is it spiritual? The woman's thing is it proper, appropriate action? So that combination, appropriate action for Krishna, then that's perfect. That's what the couple is. You understand? That's the male field. That's what Prabhupada says. Spiritual husband, religious wife. Right? He never says spiritual wife, religious husband. Right? Or spiritual husband, spiritual wife, religious husband. He doesn't say. He says spiritual husband, religious wife. Because that's what the two can add. Does that make sense? So she's trying to add, and now she's pointing out that he didn't listen to her, and now it didn't work out. But she's not saying, "I told you so," because yes, but she does, but in a affectionate way, you know, in a sad way.
That's one of the great religiosities of women, is they really, really can detect the deficiencies in their men.
Yes.
And point it out really nicely to them.
Yes. No, that's that. That's standard. That's 101. Yes. Okay, how are we doing?
This happens quite a bit. No, in the Bhagavatam, it happens quite a bit.
Yeah, no, it's constantly going on.
When Bali Maharaj was having that interaction with Ramanadev, and it was Bali Maharaj's wife who spoke up. Remember?
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
You know, I want to say something before Lord Brahma. I want to say something before.
No, it's always that. Because the point is they want the best for, so therefore then they point out these things. You know? So, but it's just a matter of training and culture, is that how cleverly you can point them out and get the effect. Like that. That's why then there's common nature and then training. So if both are trained, both have common nature, then this will work to advantage. Okay, thus Ravana was condemned not only by Lord Ramachandra, but even by his own wife, Mandodari, because she was a chaste woman. She knew the power of another chaste woman, especially such a wife as Mother Sita, right? Means chaste women are always understood. Even, you can say, it's like prostitutes. If a girl is chaste, they'll respect her. But if she's not, then, you know, they're more unchaste than them, so of course they're superior. But if there's a chaste woman, even the rough women, they'll respect. Yes.
So she can be chaste and oppose her husband.
No, she's pointed out religiously what will be the problem there. So that's another, like we said, that's the women's business, is to see that religion's being followed. The man's business is to see that practice of religion is spiritual.
So Ravana was not following Dharma.
Not in this case. Most other things he was. Otherwise, how did he come to such an elevated position?
Yeah. So therefore,
that's why it says that was his one fault.
Right. So then when Mandodari opposed him, she could take. And
yes, because it's for his benefit. Right. But because he doesn't agree, then she lets it run. You know, but she did say. Yeah, but the point is she'll say that in private. She won't say it publicly. You know? So technically, if it's said publicly, it's only because he didn't listen in private. You know, so if he listens in private, it never becomes public. You know, unless it's there for the benefit, so it's brought out. He's made the mistake like this and that because of this. Therefore, then Bali's wife is hoping that there'll be some leniency. Because once it's pointed out, especially when the woman points it out because of the connection, so somebody said it's wrong. So the two as a couple, then, okay, then things will start to go better. Okay. So. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you, the state of Lanka and also we ourselves now have no protector. By your deeds you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul fit to go to hell. Vibhishana, the pious brother of Ravana and devotee of Lord Ramachandra, received approval from Lord Ramachandra, the king of Kosala. Then he performed the prescribed funeral ceremonies for his family members and saved them from the path to hell. Srila Prabhupada comments. After giving up the body, one is transferred to another body, but sometimes if one is too sinful, he is checked from transmigrating to another body, and thus he becomes a ghost. To save a diseased person from ghostly life, the funeral ceremony or Shraddha ceremonies prescribed in authorized Shastra must be performed. Ravana was killed by Lord Ramachandra and was destined for hellish life, but by Lord Ramachandra's advice, Vibhishana, Ravana's brother, performed all the duties prescribed in relation to the dead. Thus, Lord Ramachandra was kind to Ravana even after Ravana's death. Right? So that's what the death rites are for, is so that somebody doesn't end up in a ghostly body. One gets transferred to the next situation. That's the whole point that it's for. Yes?
Is it most important that Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana himself, the Lord himself killed him? So what's most important, Shraddha ceremony or the Lord?
No, the Lord's there, but still the culture doesn't stop. Right? Means, in other words, we're following the culture, but even that, the culture is connected because it's Ramachandra's recommended. But then the whole point is why does the Veda have it? Because Krishna's given it. So, in other words, the culture remains even if there's higher aspects of the philosophy. It just means those higher aspects, then now we see is that, to please the Lord, we're performing. That's how Vibhishana is seeing it. Is that pleases Lord Ramachandra, so therefore he's doing, like this and that, and he'll do it in relationship to the Lord. Though his brother will get benefit. Because we have to be careful with that one, is that what you're saying is true. But if we're not careful with that, the devotees use that as an excuse to drop all culture. And then having dropped all culture, then they're in a cultural vacuum. Then due to lack of taste on the social, and platform, then they have to create their own samskars and their own rituals and own things to do. And so that, therefore, then what do? They take up whatever culture is the background they came from. Does that make sense? So then it becomes a problem because it doesn't have any universal draw. It doesn't draw to everybody. Just like you have, some have Christmas on the 25th of December and others have it on the 6th of January. Those two communities do not get on. You know what I'm saying? So this is a problem, is we do all these things and then say, oh, we're devotees, we don't care. And then they take up, no, but we have to do this stuff. Because this is how community works. This is all nonsense. Why? Because we say, see, this is more important, it's Krishna conscious. Throw out all the Vedic stuff, and so then what are you left with? Well, what to do? We have to follow the modern. But the point is, if you throw out the Vedic, you've already thrown out the modern. Right? You take the potato, you peel it, and if you throw the potato out, the peel goes with it. But you throw out the potato and keep the peel? You understand? So one has to be very, very careful in applying this, that what you're saying is true, but that doesn't mean that the culture is still not retained. Because otherwise, how do you express, how do you interact, how do you deal with devotees? Does that make sense?
All the people on the battlefield of Kukshetra went back home, back to Godhead, but still all the funeral rites were still performed.
Yes. No, it's just the culture. That's what you do. it's just like, the great devotee goes back to Godhead, but we still go through the ceremonies. Because that's for us. Yeah, but still, there's still the culture is there. Have to do something.
Yeah. So there's a story of Gaurakishore Das Babaji used to often say, or sometimes would say, when I die, just take my body and throw it on the street and let the dogs eat it.
Yeah.
Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati didn't let that happen.
Yes. Yeah, because there's culture. Because otherwise, what's the point? Krishna consciousness means you're using the culture connected to Krishna. Lack of Krishna consciousness means you're not using the culture. So since it's for Krishna, then we want to use the best culture available. So that's the Vedic culture. Or at least come as close to it as possible. Like that. It's because it's about Krishna. If it's about us, yes, then we use our own culture. But if it's about Krishna, we would use his culture. So then, whatever you can get in between, then you do the best you can. What do you call it? Prabhupada doing yajna with a soup ladle. It's not a ideal for doing a yajna, but that's as good as it got, because it's there, it pours, you can hold it, it's got a handle, better than a fork or something, So, maybe if you froze the ghee, cut it into little things, froze it, then you could skewer them and throw them in. With the fork, plastic forks. You just throw it. Oh no, excuse me, wooden forks. So you just toss it in. So like that. So you do as best you can. But then with time, when devotees found out what was actually what you'd use, and then they arranged, I think Prajumna, then he got these, the proper spoon. Then like that, then you move forward. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's why we'll use anything. But the point, because everything is Krishna, so that principle is that. Spoons, whatever it is, holds liquid. So, therefore, you can, you know, use any spoon. But if you have the facility to use the traditional spoon, you'd use it. But if you don't, you use whatever else is available. You know, so that, therefore, you're taking, you know, Prabhupada from, you know, one temple to another, the natural thing to use would be a Swan airplane. You don't have that, you use whatever's the next best.
American Airlines.
You know, yeah, American Airlines. Sorry? Yeah, Fuller's Earth for Tilak and like that. So it's just to use whatever's there. But once they could get Gopi Chandan, they'd use that.
And the seeds, you know, the big red.
Yeah, yeah, the big moss seeds. Yeah.
In that example, there's also being able to discriminate between things that look like they work but don't work. Like when Srila Prabhupada was provided with margarine for the jugular.
Yes.
It might work on your toast, but it doesn't work.
Well, I thought you were going to say on your toes. It doesn't work on toast.
No.
It works on toast.
No.
In Holland, they provided him with fruit salad for the younger.
Fruit so salad?
I want fruit. Everything was going on. So it took a long time, and Prabhupada said, well, what's happening with the fruit? And they come up with a fruit salad. No, no, not like that.
Oh, boy. What Prabhupada had to go through.
Right? Actually, he started chastising, and then one little kid in the back said, shouldn't you always be happy? Chant, don't you say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy? Prabhupada just looked in Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
So that's Holland.
Okay, verses 30 to 55. Lord Ramachandra returns to Ayodhya. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thereafter, Lord Ramachandra found Sita Devi sitting in a small cottage beneath a tree named Simshapa, in a forest of Ashok trees. She was lean and thin, being aggrieved because of separation from him. Seeing his wife in that condition, Lord Ramachandra was very compassionate. When Ramachandra came before her, she was exceedingly happy to see her beloved, and her lotus-like mouth showed her joy. After giving Vibhishana the power to rule the Rakshasa population of Lanka for the duration of one kalpa, wow, that's a while. Lord, so that means the whole day of Brahma. Yeah. Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, placed Sita Devi on an airplane decorated with flowers and then got on the plane himself. The period for his living in the forest having ended, the Lord returned to Ayodhya, accompanied by Hanuman, Sugriva, and his brother, Lakshmana. When Lord Ramachandra returned to his capital, Ayodhya, he was greeted on the road by the princely order, who showered his body with beautiful, fragrant flowers, while great personalities, like Lord Brahma and other demigods, glorified the activities of the Lord in great jubilation. Upon reaching Ayodhya, Lord Ramachandra heard that in his absence, his brother Bharata was eating barley cooked in urine of a cow, covering his body with the bark of trees, wearing matted locks of hair and lying on a mattress of kusha. In other words, he just followed the lifestyle of someone who was living in the forest on a vrata, like that. The most merciful Lord very much lamented this. When Lord Bharata understood that Lord Ramachandra was returning to the capital, Ayodhya, he immediately took upon his own head Lord Ramachandra's wooden shoes and came out from his camp at Nandigram. Lord Bharata was accompanied by ministers, priests, and other respectable citizens, by professional musicians vibrating pleasing musical sounds, and by learned brahmanas loudly chanting Vedic hymns. Following in the procession were chariots drawn by beautiful horses with harnesses of golden rope. These chariots were decorated by flags with golden embroidery and by other flags of various sizes and patterns. There were soldiers bedecked with golden armor, servants bearing betel nut, and many well-known and beautiful prostitutes. Many servants followed on foot, bearing on an umbrella, whisks, different grades of precious jewels, and other paraphernalia befitting a royal reception. Accompanied in this way, Lord Bharata, his heart softened in ecstasy, and his heart, eyes full of tears, approached Lord Ramachandra and fell at his lotus feet with great ecstatic love. After offering the wooden shoes before Lord Ramachandra, Lord Bharata stood with folded hands, his eyes full of tears, and Lord Ramachandra bathed Bharata with tears while embracing him with both arms for a long time. Accompanied by Mother Sita and Lakshmana, Lord Ramachandra then offered his respectful obeisances unto the learned brahmanas and elderly persons in the family, and all the citizens of Ayodhya offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. The citizens of Ayodhya, upon seeing their king return after a long absence, offered him flower garlands, waved their upper cloths, and danced in great jubilation. O king, Lord Bharata carried Lord Ramachandra's wooden shoes. Sugriva and Vibhishana carried a whisk and an excellent fan. Hanuman carried a white umbrella. Shatrughna carried a bow and two quivers. And Sita Devi carried a water pot filled with water from holy places. Angada carried a sword, and Jambavan, king of the rikshas, carried a golden shield. O King Parikit, as the Lord sat on his airplane of flowers, with women offering him prayers and reciters chanting about his characteristics, he appeared like the moon with the stars and planets. Thereafter, having been welcomed by his brother Bharata, Lord Ramachandra entered the city of Ayodhya in the midst of a festival. Then he entered the palace. He offered obeisances to all the mothers, including Kaikeyi and the other wives of Maharaj Dasarath, and especially his own mother, Kaushalya. He also offered obeisances to the spiritual preceptors such as Vashishta. Friends of his own age and younger friends worshipped him, and he returned their respectful obeisances, as did Lakshmana and Mother Sita. In this way, they all entered the palace. Okay, we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.